3005. That's the.
That's the risk.
Risk management.
Risk management section. Under the 900 series, you've got a attorney general's office. You paid them $14,000 to do with litigation costs for Vets Lab. It's number 56. And I don't really want to know, need the details for that, but number 34, you paid Stephen E. Pitt legal services of $24,000. So I'm wondering what the circumstances are that I assume that Stephen Pitt is an attorney, why you wouldn't use the attorney general.
Tammy?
Mr. Chairman, if I can defer to Tammy Hooper, the risk manager for the state.
Yeah, Tammy, we're probably going to have some other questions for you on the GPS and everything, too.
Hello? Is it on?
So instead of bringing the answers, you brought the woman with the answers.
Right.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the 900 series, that is also includes expert witnesses that we use for the Attorney General. So Mr. Pitt, I may or may not be an attorney. Generally, the only time we hire outside counsel is if we have a conflict of interest for one of the attorneys in the Attorney General's office, and we have to hire outside counsel. Otherwise, that 900 series is for expert witnesses that we use to defend various cases.
Right.
Oh, so it says
D.O. So it says D.O. So is it an orthodontist, I believe?
That's a dentist? Doctor of osteopathy, I believe.
Okay. All right.
And so we have probably an automobile case.
Okay. That explains that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Tammy, I've had some discussion with Tammy. She can probably clarify, if you would, please, so for the committee's benefit, the on this GPS thing. I think you told me that the money to fund that did not actually come out of the risk pool itself. Would you explain?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the risk pool, what I consider my budget is the appropriation that I receive on July 1st. But as Rory Horsley's told me, my fund is the risk pool, so it's all of the money. But what I expended the money from for the GPS was from my appropriation that I received on July the 1st as part of my loss prevention program.
And that's a general fund, correct?
It's general fund on July 1st, and then it's also B11 on July 1st to become – I'm sorry, go ahead. I defer to Rory. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, the general fund appropriation gets transferred into Fund 6 at the beginning of July, at the start of the biennium.
So it goes into the risk pool.
That is
so correct. I guess it does actually.
Yes. But for me, my operating budget is that appropriation and nothing more, unless I were to need it, you know, then I would have to ask for it. So I operate with that.
On the day that your appropriation becomes general fund appropriation becomes effective, it is immediately then transferred into the risk pool. Is that right? You have to speak audibly, please.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry.
So,
yes.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. So this was your decision to put the GPS in there, or was this
else's? There had been a pilot study done by ANI in conjunction with Motor Pool. And as we were looking at the program itself, I said, you know, this looks to me like a loss prevention because we handle all of the auto claims for the state of Wyoming, and so we self-insure our auto. And so to me, this was a loss prevention to try to maybe reduce accidents, make our employees be aware of their driving habits to make them safer. And so, yes, I determined that it was a loss prevention program that I could fund within my duties of the statutes.
Was there something else that you took this money away that would have been spent on that you didn't spend on it for this instead?
No, not to my knowledge. I have claims that I pay out of that fund all of the time as well. And so for now, I mean, I looked at my budget and determined that I could fund this program.
Okay. Thank you.
And go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Chairman. Tammy, then thanks for that explanation. So really, then it's not a – the state's not going to see any reduced insurance rate since we're self-insured, but we're hoping to see then a reduced losses, basically.
Absolutely. That's what I look at, is reducing losses, trying to prevent those things that haven't happened yet. That's one of the jobs of a risk manager, is to try to see into the future and to try to prevent those losses. So I'm hoping that we'll see reduced auto claims, auto accidents, and that's where we'll see our savings.
So when will you be able to, I mean, you've obviously studied this, as mentioned by the director, as a best practice. Other states must be doing it. Our peers, YDOT's done it for years. When are we going to find out? I mean, when's the rubber going to hit the road, so to speak, that we're going to find out and you're going to be able to come back to us and give us the results on this?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if I could grab some paperwork.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Mr. Chairman, every year by statute, I'm required to provide a report to the legislature. This was my report in 2015, in the spring of 2015, and it goes to the governor, to the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, and to the Chairman of the Joint Appropriations Committee on the Senate and the House side. You received one of these. What I'm hoping is that by my next report in next spring, February, at the end of February, that you'll see that the auto and liability physical damage claims will reduce. We've had, you were interested apparently in some of the claims for the last, from 2010 to 2014, we had 5,831 auto damage claims. And so I'm hoping that the number in 2014 was 1,150, and so I'm hoping that we'll see that reduced. We also tried to do reductions in auto claims by requiring defensive driving online for all of our state employees, as well as other training programs that we offer for them as well for loss prevention.
So it seems like we're, Mr. Chairman, it seems like our expenditure trend then is less than what we're appropriating. Obviously, the fund is growing. And I asked it earlier, I mean, can we reduce this general fund appropriation? There's a way to do this, either through a rate holiday or something, where we can get some kind of savings to our budget going forward. And I don't know, we don't need to solve it right now, but there's a way to do it, either through a rate holiday or through just a reduction in the general fund appropriation. Federal funds involved, other funds, I have to figure. I don't know.
I have no federal funds involved in mine, no.
So, Mr. Chairman, so Tammy, when we were talking and I asked you about what kind of reserve, and you had done an actuarial study.
We just had an actuarial study completed.
Okay, would you explain that, please?
Certainly. By statute, in the statutes, I'm required to have an actuarial study done, and one of my requirements as a risk manager is to run an actuarially sound fund for the claims. And so they have it's here, it's the draft. I didn't bring the final, I apologize. But they have an expectation that the funding for, and it's all claims that we have. It's for our auto, it's for our property, it's for our general liability, and it's also for peace officers, because we insure all peace officers in the state of Wyoming. So that includes federal claims, because those generally don't have tort limits on federal claims. So they have predicted those out for the next 3 or 4 years, I can't remember, at a 90% confidence level. And it's about between $4.5 million to almost $5 million a year. So to run an actual, and then you also have what's called an incurred but not reported, it's IBNR. And that's based on historical data where the actuary takes your past history and projects out what your potential claims would be coming up that have happened, but you haven't, nobody's reported them yet. And that's at about 3.6 million now. So between that and then the actuarial funding, that's where I need to keep my fund at in order to maintain it as a sound fund. Okay. My study's given to the SAO CAFR group as well as the external auditor.
Okay. So we're talking probably $25-30 million.
Yes, sir.
You would need to be
actually
sound. 90% funded.
Yes.
But aren't and there's 50
52 in there.
But aren't some of those federal funds though, Game and Fish and some others that you bill through that we I don't
for know. I'm sorry, for the transfers?
Chairman.
I'm sorry.
When YDOT creates their vehicle usage rate, they include the costs associated with this particular billable event. So when YDOT bills the usage of a vehicle on a federal project, then that gets turned in, and then that gets transferred over to risk management. So eventually there is a tie to that revenue source.
And there are game and fish funds, too.
There are game and fish funds, but I don't know if there are any federal game and fish funds.
Okay.
They may be doing the same thing. I don't know.
I'm just looking at these fund sources, yeah. So, okay, well, so it's not just easy to say we're going to take $10 million out of the risk pool. That's my point. There's some
I think you
entanglements.
Could relatively simply stop money going into the pool.
The holiday.
I would hesitate going in and taking cash out of the pool.
Yeah.
That would be no different than the medical benefit situation for EGI.
Okay.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you.
Appreciate that information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one quick question on this. Are there other programs? I mean, there are obviously other programs like this GPS program that are have yearly commitments, ongoing commitments for risk management reduction. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, I have a yearly commitment to Coastal DuPont, which is a training system that the state utilizes for all state employees that offers a variety of trainings, defensive driving, flagger training for YDOT employees, snowplow driver defensive driving.
That's the 72,000 and the 900 series, Coastal training techniques.
Coastal DuPont, yes.
I think it's number 31. I think it's 72,000. It's hard to follow these crowds.
Nah.
Yes, sir.
It is, I think, and then, okay, so that's a yearly ongoing kind of. Okay, well, I think it's a learning process for us.
No.
We're thinking these things would have been billed through each agency, and it's an agency cost and comes through, but I think I'm coming around to your thoughts on risk management and how to pay for it, but still going to scratch on this a little bit. So until we learn a little more about it, but so those are really the basic ones that are out there. Then anything else that
for yearly costs, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, those kind of things that we need to know about probably.
Well, I have yearly insurance premiums.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And those. Never go down, and so I'll have that's what we renew every July 1st. That's the beginning of our insurance year. We will bind the coverage sometime in the month of May or June, and so that will include the excess coverage that we have for civil rights claims, usually involving peace officers. It includes our property insurance. We insure the aircraft for the state. The equipment that's on the aircraft. We have a crime policy that we also have for the state employees. And I think, so we have those are yearly costs as well.
Yeah, more.
What are, and Mr. Chairman, then 900 series just, so basically you have 300,000 in your intended use, then it says, legal and professional fees related to risk management claims and loss prevention. And that's the...
Yes, sir. That's
all
to
pay... All those things wrap into that.
That's to pay for the defense of claims that end up, whether we take depositions, if we're seeking expert witnesses or opinions or evaluations. Often, if we've had to hire outside counsel, that's where that money comes from.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator.
It's off topic, but, Tammy, I haven't seen you in about a year, and I just wanted to compliment you on the job you did as chair of the Republican Party. I think you did an outstanding job under very tough circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't know if that was okay to say.
Okay.
Yeah, wouldn't you agree?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Tammy. So now we'll come back to you, Dean.
Do you want to agree?
All right. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, back to ANI's budget, page 48, unit 3051. This is, again, the motor vehicle management system. The motor pool, as we have been discussing, is funded by other funds, and priority number six is a request for computer replacement and monitors that we had discussed earlier today. The total ask is for $3,182, and it's from internal funds. I would point out that it was recommended as approval by the governor and the OCIO.
Okay.
The next unit in ANI's budget is page 50.
Yes.
Mr. Bossett.
The next unit is, again, the General Services Division on page 58 for the administration. This is the office that oversees all of the General Services Division. It has one employee. It's I believe it's the administrator. And there is no exception request in this budget.
Yes.
On the spreadsheet for the general services, you've got motor vehicle and airplane SUP support, I take it, and that's the $6.4 million. Is that – how many airplanes are we talking about here?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's a coding, the way it's coded in the budget system. ANI does not manage any airplanes.
Mr. Chairman, that would be resident for the YDOT side. It's just the coding in WOLS, and it takes care of all those categories, but there is nothing in ANI's budget for aircraft.
Okay. Thank you. I was confused by seeing it in there.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Director Fawcett, just again on the revenue under the administration unit, looking on page 52, it looks like the revenue projections for 2017 are, you know, a third of what they were this biennium. Can you explain that?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. This gets back to the discussion we've been having most of the day about moving positions from the division to the accounting section. Okay. For agency consolidations. One position was moved. Well, actually, there were five positions that were moved as from this division to the accounting division.
Okay.
Oh, I've been corrected here. It's one to accounting, two to trades, and two to construction. We already visited about the construction ones.
OK. Okay.
The next,
Mr. Chairman, before we go on, excuse me. Page 55, you've got on professional fees 901 for the $28,000 for the Rockwell building. Can you just identify what that's for so if that question comes up, I can respond to it?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, that is actually the next unit, 3503 on page 54. This is the request, an exception request for increased maintenance of the Rockwell building. The Rockwell building is a building in Sheridan that is state-owned. It's not a leased building, so we own the building. Rather than having state employees in Casper to maintain the building, we contract the services out. So that's what the professional fees are, is for the contracted maintenance services, which includes everything from janitorial, custodial, to snow removal, to some minor building fixes. I would say that we have not done any. We have not had really a budget to maintain the building. When we bought the building in 2009, 2011, it was a new building, and it's a fairly large size building. It includes a parking garage, but as things age, it's going to require some maintenance. So we have requested in our budget $35,000 for maintenance that is outside of the scope of the contract, the professional services contract, and this would also be outside of the scope of what we would generally do with major maintenance in the construction management division.
And, Mr. Chair, is that something that you anticipate being then a biannual expense, or is it a one-time?
Typically, it would be going on as a ongoing cost. I don't know what the amount is. This is the first time we've requested this kind of funding.
So this is a guesstimate, and then you'll let us know what the actual
correct.
Costs are.
Correct. It could be less. It could be more. This basically covers the maintenance of the building that is outside of the scope of the contract and does not fall under major maintenance.
Kind of off on topic, but off topic. I mean, just the recalling back. I mean, we're always in this deal. We're looking at these rent payments all across the state, you know, and building office buildings, those kind of things. Certainly, it's probably paid for itself by now. The lease space. Any comment on that? Or $5 million over the last 6 years, or getting closer, probably. Do you know anything about that previous lease? Remember that?
We believe that certainly there are cost savings by owning the building as opposed to leasing it. In time, it certainly will save the state money. I don't have that schedule for you. I can get that if you'd like. But it is proving cost effective. But we do have these outside costs that we also have to consider. I would just point out that if we were to hire state employees, we've calculated that it would take 2 full-time state employees and 2 part-time employees to do this work. So in that sense, I think this is a savings. Mr. Chairman, the next unit is facility operations, page 57, unit 3054. The facility operations is responsible for maintaining a clean, healthy, safe work environment of the Capitol complex. This is the unit that provides custodial services to over 1 million square feet in the Capitol complex. There were no budget exception requests to this budget. Pardon? Oh, I take that back. It's on page 58. There is a safety needs request. This request is priority number 4. And again, this was to meet the OSHA requirements of the facility operating group. What this covers specifically is, I talked earlier about OSHA training, but this is things like pesticide safety training, how to use respirators, fall protection safety training, as well as other workshop safety. Some of this will be done in-house, but some of it will obviously require that we send employees to get the necessary training. So that's why you see that the cost or the request is for $22,156, which does include some dues for and registrations to different safety organizations, travel, and then a small amount there for safety supplies and equipment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And Director Fawcett, so you've got, as I'm looking at my notes, it looks like we've got these OSHA training funds in three different places in the budget.
That is correct.
And are we looking at then, are there employees in each of these units that are benefiting from those funds, or are they being pooled, you know, and focused on a couple of different points? I mean, how is that being used?
The request is for three separate units in A&I. They're in different divisions, actually. One we talked about earlier was in the director's office. The other is in the trades group, which is all of our skilled craft folks like our electricians, plumbers. And this request is in our facilities, which is our custodial and grounds crew. So they are for different groups of employees in our department in different divisions. Mr. Chairman, the next section is on page 61, which is General Services Trades Management. Again, this is the group that provides the technical skills in the Capitol Complex. On page 61, you see that we have an exception request for uninterruptible power supply system maintenance. What we've discovered is we have two UPS systems in the state grounds. One is on the Supreme Court building and the other is at the combined labs facilities. These are rather unique UPS systems. They require somebody that has a license to maintain them, and they require a certain effort of skill to do that. So because of the highly specialized nature of the training and expertise, it's required that we contract with an authorized vendor to provide maintenance of these UPS systems. I would just point out that we discovered that there was an issue with this when the Supreme Court had an outage earlier last summer, and it did cause some disruption to the Supreme Court. So we believe that there is a great need to make sure that those UPS units are functioning and that they're maintained properly. We are requesting $35,000 from General Fund to maintain those GPS systems.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
UPS.
Director Fawcett, would it be possible to train a A&I employee to do this work? I think you have people in the maintenance department who are probably qualified. It just looks like we're paying the manufacturer to do their own maintenance. Would that be a cost savings?
We certainly could explore whether it would be more cost effective to get one of our own employees trained to do this kind of work. I today don't know how much it would cost to get that training and certification. As a director, the issue that I have with that is you get one person trained, and then if they were to take a job somewhere else, then you're kind of back in this boat again. The next request is priority number 3 on page 62. This is for the Asset Works maintenance system. What Asset Works is it's a computerized database that is the same system that the school facilities department is using. And this system is used to go around and assess the quality and the condition of state buildings. So we're currently in the process of completing that inventory of all state buildings and state government. This helps the SBC as they go through and identify the priorities as far as major maintenance to different buildings. And it also helps the construction management and general services division when it comes to whether it's more cost-effective to keep fixing up a building or if we should consider moving out of it. So what this software is this is a maintenance fee. It's an ongoing maintenance fee that is paid to a company to maintain the database in this system. The request is for $136,000 from General Fund 900 Series Professional Services.
So, Mr. Chairman, that fee would be for that particular entity. It's $136,000 per biennium, and that'll be ongoing. Is that what I understand?
That is correct because it is a software system that would be ongoing. We found there was a great partnering with the school facilities department. We could begin to share data. So I think this is a move as A&I works with the school facilities to use a common system.
And so, Mr. Chairman, this is a bid with the same company that the facilities uses in order to piggyback together.
I believe that's correct, and there may be some cost efficiencies or savings with the contract because we're both in on the system.
So that was my next question. Have you had that discussions with facilities and also with the vendor?
We've had the conversation with school facilities about using the system today. I don't know about the specific cost savings of the contract. Continuing on, the next request on page 63 is priority number 4. This is safety needs. Again, this is with a different group. This is with our trades management group. And this group, it is getting the required safety training related to electrical safety, respirators, confined workspace, and fall protection. So some of it is similar training or the same training. It's just going to different employees. The ask is for $33,000 of general fund for the biennium to include licenses, registration, and supplies, safety supplies.
Mr. Senator.
Is this also an ongoing expense? Will this be a biannual expense?
This would be an ongoing request, yes. If I can continue on then, the next unit is 3556 on page 66. This is in the General Services Division as well, and this is for utilities. We are not requesting that there be any additional funds for utilities this year.
Hmm?
Yes. If the Capitol is going to be shut down and basically gutted, shouldn't that put a big dent in your utility cost?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, as I understand it, we will still be paying for the utility cost of the Capitol and the Herschler if the Herschler continues forward during renovation. So, the way I understand it is that there is not really a meter specifically for the Capitol. It's part of the Capitol complex. So there will be still a charge that the state will have to pay for utilities of the Capitol and for some of the utilities during construction. So at this point, to answer your question directly, we do not know if there will be a reduction in utilities, or if it possibly could even go up.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
So, Dean, what about this current year? I mean, your burn rate on utilities, I think you're considerably lower, aren't you? I mean, to date, I mean, we've got 6 months left. How much we? Much are we going to have left over?
It's my understanding that we project by the end of this calendar year we will have about $500,000 in our utility. Is that correct? For the biennium, we'll have about $500,000 left in our pool.
So that will what happens to that? I mean, is it going to revert or is it?
It would revert. That is correct, and we would continue to make utility requests in the future.
And then that can't be used anywhere else.
That is correct.
Can't be B11 or I guess it could, but not okay. All right, I'm just wondering, you know, as we build budgets in the future, I mean, we're kind of all-time low utility prices now, and we're going to come in $500,000 less, and so if maybe that's a potential savings there as we go forward a little bit to be able to trim there.
So. Mr. Chairman, I agree. It's had a mild winter so far. And
yeah. Yeah, that's so, okay. Well, everybody's got notes on that,
A&I
guys.
let me ask a question, if I may. On page 66, with regards under revenue, it shows general fund is part B, and then it's up from 6.9 to 7.6. What's the deal there?
Mr. Chairman, this includes our supplemental request here.
Okay.
Continuing on, the next division's unit in A&I is 3400. This is the construction management division. The construction management division is responsible for all of the construction and responsibilities in state government to include major maintenance. On page 68, you see that there were no exception requests, and the positions, the 14 to 16 positions are the two project managers that we talked about at the beginning of my presentation.
Yes.
On 3453, you've got the real property rental. Are these all the cost of all the rentals, real property rentals around the state?
This is our leasing budget for state government. This is correct. This is on page 76.
Is there a master list that we could look at that would have the properties where they are and what the rent is?
There certainly is, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns. We provide that to the SBC every quarter, and we'd be happy to get you that report. It lists where all of the lease spaces are in the state and the cost.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that. I think every member should get one.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, that document is on SharePoint under the pre-meeting materials and available to everyone. A&I provided it to us in November, so I can show you.
Oh, thank you. Then we already have it. Thanks.
Continuing on, in A&I under the Construction Management Division, on page 73 is the unit for community colleges. There is no additional budget request for this unit. This is major maintenance and capital construction projects for the colleges in the state. Page 75, unit 3453, that's the one that we were just discussing. This is for A&I to be the lease agent for all agencies in the state, with the exception of the Adjutant General Game and Fish Transportation in the University of Wyoming. There is no exception budget request for unit 3453. On page 77 is the Capitol Building Rehabilitation and Restoration unit. This is the two full-time, time-limited positions that A&I has for this, keeping this project going. There is no additional budget request for capital renovation and restoration. Continuing on, the next unit in A&I is 3500 on page.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to, in Director Fawcett, just to jump back on that point, the funds for those two positions come out of your budget. They're not coming out of the capital restoration account. Is that right?
Those funds are coming out of the capital restoration account.
They are coming. Okay.
The next division in A&I is 3500, found on page 79. This is the Human Resources Division. The Human Resources Division provides all of the HR services, centralized services for state government, and we'll be going through the rest of the units talking about the recommended changes. So the next section is on page 81. This is the operations section of the Human Resources Division. There were no additional budget exception requests in the operations unit.
Yes, Don.
I just wanted to point out that there was a reduction to the standard budget made by the governor. So the numbers are reflected again in the table. The amount is $136,375, but there was no commensurate narrative. Just wanted to point that out.
It appears under grant payments. Is that correct?
The $136,375 was for the intern program that we spoke about earlier this morning.
Okay. Thank you.
Continuing on, I believe I'm on page 84, which is Human Resources Training Unit. On page 85 for Unit 3503, the Department of A&I is recommending a reduction of internal services funds of $171,279. Previously, the Human Resources Division did provide training to state agencies, and these internal funds were used to pay vendors and contractors. Since we have made an attempt moving more towards distance learning and doing things electronically, there isn't the need to have funds for this type of training any longer. So this is a reduction to our budget from internal funds.
Yes.
So is this human resources training, is this unit closing down then, or?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Shutting down. So how much money is in there? Do you have any money in this?
There will not be any balance left in the budget as of the end of June of 2016, so it's pretty minimal at this point.
So it's all being used for these purposes?
Correct.
It's not being transferred anywhere, then. There's no savings?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
We think that if there are requests for agencies by agencies to do various kinds of training that we can directly bill agencies rather than having a fund for doing it. The next unit is 3508 on page 87. This is for the distance learning group unit that I was just visiting about. This has been a great change in A&I as we've tried to use technology to train employees enterprise-wide. You see some of the courses that we're doing there to include some of the management supervisory training as well as specific HR training. The nice thing about this is that employees can take the training on their desks at their convenience, and there's not any required travel So we see a lot of wins with the distance learning training. There is no exception budget request for this unit. The next section is 3509, which is the market policy update. That unit, if you'll recall, the Appropriations Committee gave appropriated to A&I $25,000 to go out and do a market survey. We've already reported back to you on this, so that's what this this unit was. The next section in A&I moves to employee group insurance, unit 3800 on page 90. What you'll see is that there was a reduction of one position. One position, again, was moved from the group insurance group to be consolidated in the accounting consolidation. So that's why you see that change in position count. Next unit, 3801 on page 91, is for the administrative services of the group insurance program. There were no recommended changes in that particular unit. On page 92, which I guess is part of that unit, is priority number 8 is a equipment replacement. So we are requesting $21,597 for internal funds to replace computers and monitors in the employee group insurance program. On page 93 is a 400 series increase. This is a exception budget request. The group insurance program is currently in the process of developing a new system to track enrollments of employees as well as billing. That system is currently in development and should be rolled out in the next approximately 6 months. We've been working with ETS, and ETS has suggested that we need to include in our budget $283,567, which would be ongoing costs for maintenance and support of that system. Priority number 11 below that is the elimination of a position. I think we've already visited about that. That will be a reduction to the internal services funds of $152,104. That position was previously responsible for helping coordinate the state employee group insurance wellness program, and that position will be removed.
Mr. Chairman, can we go back to the unit 3801? I'd like a little bit more explanation on the ETS-driven changes underlying the IT infrastructure and how is that their programmer that works for ETS, and how did they come up with those figures? Or can you explain that a little?
It's my understanding that with this particular system that's being built, it's being built with a contractor. But once the system is built, the maintenance of the system will be provided by ETS.
And then why would the build out would be more expensive than the annual maintenance on it? So I don't understand why it would be an ongoing basis.
This would be for the support of the system necessary to keep the system going forward.
Do you have, Mr. Chairman, do you have a written proposal, whatever is it, from ETS that outlines this for you, and how far along down the road are you on it?
We're not sure at this point. We'll have to get back to you on that.
Could you do
that? I believe we do, because this recommendation did come specifically from ETS, the dollar amount.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, in the with the increase from ETS, is this something that's unique to A&I, or is this something, this fee increase from ETS, can be something we're going to see in agencies throughout state government?
This charge is unique to this system, which is internal funds that would be applicable basically to all employees on the group insurance program.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
There is ETS asked for the 430, 405, 410 scattered throughout agencies' budgets for them to help support the agency's budgets. Fortunately, what we were able to do on the 420 or the telecommunications cost through ETS's efforts of saving money, it came out 0.04% different in total from what they were able to save in telecommunication costs and then the enterprise increases that ETS is going to be providing all the agencies in their budgets, including the one that Director Fawcett just pointed out. I've got detail on that. If you'd like to sit down with me, I'll be happy to share it with you.
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kevin, I would like to see that. I have seen that in every agency that we've seen so far. It's just that this one is $250,000. The other have been just a couple of thousand of dollars. And so adding it together, it seems to me like it will be millions of dollars that's being transferred to ETS without much explanation other than that they told agencies to put it in their budgets.
Right. And in my spreadsheet that we've worked to develop that is representative of about $1.9 million in ask and $1.8 million of savings in the telecommunications budget. And you're correct. Some of them are $2,000 because what we did is we used the savings by agency unit to make up the difference for the ETS ask for their development costs. So the original ask might have been $40,000, but because that agency had saved $38,000 in telecommunication costs, the ask then turned out to be only $2,000 because what we did was we were protecting the general fund budget. We're protecting that as best we could. So we used the savings in telecommunications to do the best we could to make up for those costs. And then the agencies had to ask for anything above that in their budgets. It's clearer when you see the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Kevin. I would like to see that spreadsheet. And just as a comment, it seems to me that we're being asked via agency budgets to, in some cases, agree to a couple thousand dollars, and in a couple of other cases, a quarter or maybe even more millions of dollars. And it seems to me that this is really an ask from ETS.
ETS is responsible for the enterprise support as designed by the legislature. And what we've done is we've did everything we could to use what savings we could first to offset any agency requests for developmental issues. And then what takes place is now is that inside the agency's budget, like the one that you're looking at right now, would be that's a revenue source now for ETS, that $283,000. So the enterprise, when they're developing software from ETS, it becomes a direct billable event. And there's also the indirect cost clearing that we have in the 300 that supports ETS. And then there's direct general funds budget that are in ETS. And that will all be explained by Director Waters after A&I's budget.
Mr. Chair, just either as a follow-up or a comment to be reminded to ask this, what if we said, for example, no to Director Fawcett and yes to the Department of Health?
We are tracking that, and Don Richards and myself, and we've been in conversation about, well, what would happen if you cut $1 million out of the agency's budget revenue streams that are supporting ETS? Well, shouldn't there be some in-kind reduction in ETS's budget because they no longer have a funding source? The answer to that question is yes. Whether it's an absolute dollar basis, there's a formula-driven fixed cost issue that ETS has, so I don't know that's necessarily dollar for dollar, but if you were to cut $1 million or this $283,000 out of A&I's budget to support the EGI, the Employee Group Insurance Program, you'd expect the ETS's spending authority to be reduced somewhat in kind. And we are on track for that.
Okay.
Moving on, Mr. Chairman, on page 98, unit 3817, group insurance. This is for the employee life insurance unit. There is no additional exception request for this unit.
Okie doke.
Page 100. This is the employee health group insurance budget. You heard Mr. Hibbard talk about the fact that A&I went out and contracted with Siegel Group to do an actuarial review of both our claims and our utilization as well as our revenue. And as part of this, they've come back and we have calculated that A&I group insurance will need an additional spending authority of $75,122,225. This funding is anticipated to help offset the claims that we're expecting coming up in the upcoming biennium. We know that healthcare costs have gone up on an aggregate of about, I think, 8%. Certainly the drug costs alone have been much higher than that. But we believe that in order to pay the claims that we're anticipating based on a review of our claims history and our exposure to risk, we are requesting that $75,122,225 be appropriated to the group insurance program for internal funds to pay those claims.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Fawcett, just a couple questions to refresh my memory. On the health insurance, what is the deductible and the co-pays for state employees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have a number of different options for state employees to take as far as deductibles. Most employees, about, I believe, two-thirds of our employees are on the $350 deductible. We do have a $750 deductible. We have 26% of our active employees on that. And we have a $1,500 high deductible health plan as well as a $3,000 for the active employees. So we have basically four different deductible elections that employees can choose.
Mr. Chairman, and what's the copay amounts in percentages?
We don't have that information in front of us. I think it's between 80 and 85%.
Senator.
What's the incentive for a state employee to take $1,500 deductible versus $350?
It would be less money out of their pocket, for one thing. Their premiums. So some employees who can save up money can afford a higher deductible, where perhaps others prefer the lower end deductible. So we constantly encourage employees to look at the different options. We have our group insurance unit going around the state every year, having meetings with state employees, sending out material, and encouraging them to add up the cost, what works for them. But at the end of the day, it's employees who make the decision how much they want to pay and what deductible they're willing to consider.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a list of percentage of state employees in each of the four deductible categories?
Oh, I do, but I don't have it with me.
Could you get that to us, please?
I certainly can.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Don.
Follow-up question. Director Fawcett, I think you have a spreadsheet or information that indicates those things such as the deductibles, co-pays versus the employees' premiums. Could you give us a copy of that? I think you did one time. I know I can't find mine. Thank you.
And to answer Mr. Senator Burns' question, I do have a slide here. We have 62% of our employees on the $250 deductible. $350. We have 62% of all employees on the $350 deductible. We have 26.6% of our employees on the $750 deductible. And then when we move to the $1,500 deductible, it's 7.7% of active employees. And when we move to the highest deductible, it's 7.7 as well. Does that meet your need?
Yeah, it meets my need.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Director Fawcett, is it my understanding that our state plan going to be considered under the ACA as a Cadillac plan at some point? Do we know that yet?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we do know that if things continue as they are with the Affordable Care Act, the state of Wyoming does face what we call an excise tax. It's unfair that perhaps it's being called a Cadillac tax because that's inferring that state employees have the richest insurance plan out there. In fact, we did a survey with our 12 surrounding states that we compare our employees to, and we found that when we look at single deductible and out-of-pocket premiums, our employees are right in the middle. They're approximately half of the employers are above and approximately half or less. So there is a potential as things move forward that with the excise tax or the Cadillac tax as it is inferred to, that we would have to pay a tax if our employees are 40% of the cost of health insurance exceeds the predetermined premium thresholds that are established by the federal government. Today, that premium threshold is expected is currently at $10,200 for individual coverage, and for families, the coverage is $27,500. So we're closely monitoring that. We will be working with that. We have been working with the Siegel Group. This was part of their actuarial projections, and those did not include the university. Or they did include all of the entities that group insurance covers. The total initial range is an estimate based on health insurance could be as for the state could be as high as $7 million. The cost of the state to the executive branch of the state could be $4,300,000 to the university. Could be 1,500,000, community colleges could be 900, and to the Natrona County School District could be $1,000. So we are monitoring that very closely, and of course we don't know in 2018 what the final regulations and rules are, but we have done this cost analysis at this time, and we will continue to bring you developing information as we get more information.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So we've got about 2 years to kind of see how this all settles out and will that take effect in is it in the calendar year 2018?
I believe that is correct.
Okay, so we've got one more year to figure it out.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Get a little feedback.
Mr. Chairman, moving on, the next unit is 3819. This is the dental insurance unit. We are requesting in this unit for an increase of $1,927,404 for spending authority for anticipated claims in the next biennium for dental insurance. The next unit is 3830. This is the voluntary benefits. Group insurance provides a number of voluntary benefits to our employees. They include vision, short-term disability, long-term disability, and long-term care. These premiums are borne completely by the employee, and the group insurance section is requesting that we increase the internal funds for the voluntary insurance by $1,500,000. The next unit is 3850 on page 109. This is for the flexible benefit program. This is a program where employees set aside money pre-tax to pay for their medical expenses and different expenses. And we have no budget ask or adjustment in that unit. The next unit is 4501 on page 112. This is the Economic Analysis Division. I will point out on page 113 in the Economic Analysis Division, we moved one position from the Economic Analysis Division to the Budget Division. This person is responsible for doing a lot of the multimedia work that you're seeing on our website and various presentations in front of you. So that is a change in the position count. Other than that, there is no exception budget request for Unit 4501.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Director, I've been curious about this division in relation to the Department of Workforce Services, Labor Management Information Division as well. It seems to me that the two do comparable kinds of work and, in fact, refer to each other regularly. So I'm curious about having two distinct divisions doing very comparable work in different agencies. The one thing I see you do that's different is Craig. But other than that, there's a lot of labor force and kind of economic indicators in each division.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. There is some duplication of effort, but I think the focus is different. The Economic Analysis Division does a lot of the demographic work for the Department of Labor. That may also be somewhat the case with Workforce Services. The Economic Analysis Division works with a lot of state agencies, and they do cost modeling. You may have heard of the REMI system where they go out and do estimates of economic impact to communities, to schools, and even to state agencies. So that's another aspect. And then you are correct, the Craig revenue forecasting is a huge, huge part of what this division does do.
Yes, ma'am.
Director, I'm curious, do you know if there are other places where economists are employed in the state? Or are you the two units?
We do have other employees in economist classification, employee classifications in state government. I know that from my previous job, like public service department has an economist who looks at rates and those kinds of things. I'd have to ponder on that for a few minutes to think of some of the other agencies. But there are other agencies that do have that classification of economists in their agency.
Okay, thanks.
Alrighty.
Page 114 is the WESP, the WESP program. This is one thing that is unique to the Economic Analysis Division. This is one position was responsible for that program, and again, that's the program that does economic, social, and regulatory analysis for state agencies and government look at specific impacts to those governments. So this person does run an economic model and is able to do some revenue forecasting to other entities of the government. There is no budget increase exception budget request in this particular unit. The last division of A&I is found on page 117. This is the State Library Division. The State Library Division, if you look on page 19, you see that there is an adjustment of the total number of positions of 20 to 18. Those, again, are part of our department fiscal consolidation. Two of those positions were moved to the accounting section. And beyond that, there was no budget exception request at the State Library.
Yes. This is actually the first chance I've had to ask you about this question. There's been consideration for the last few years of moving the State Library over to State Parks and Cultural Resources, seemingly to be more with their type of people as opposed to the cold-hearted, mean people over at A&I. Or that's the way it's being portrayed. And I was wondering if I could get your opinion on that.
I'm just saying.
Well, I personally think A&I is a good agency to work for. But having said that, I think that there were obviously reasons why the State Library was put in A&I when we were called the Department of Administration and Information, and that would be part of the information focus of our agency. The primary work of the library is to county libraries around the state. So they do provide services to state agencies. They provide services to obviously the legislature as well. The employees in the library could be in our department or they could be in another department. It does depend a lot on where the best fit is. I will say that the nature of a library has changed over the last 10 years. We're more digital than ever before. And I think if you look at some of the successes of the state library recently, most of those efforts have all been in digital areas. So I think the technology piece is there. I think we still do maintain records for state government. So it is a repository of records in that sense. But the library is a unique division simply because of their clientele. It is one of our divisions that is primarily outfacing, serving school libraries and county libraries around the state. So I don't know. I think there probably are pros and cons for it to stay in A&I, and there could be reasons it may be better fitted somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman, that was a diplomatic answer.
My opinion is...
Yes, your opinion.
My opinion is the library is functioning well in Department of A&I.
Thank you.
Okie doke. Any other questions on the library? That closes out your...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, rule.
Oh.
Excuse me, I would just point out, this is the final agency where there is a reduction of $30,000 to the standard budget for which there is no narrative.
Oh, that's right. It's over here.
Okey-doke.
What is the, what's the reduction? Dean?
State Library.
No, it's under maintenance contracts external, it looks like.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, we consulted with the State Library Group, and they have a database that they're no longer in need of. And so this was a cut that they felt that they could make that was ongoing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was just, if I could just get a brief explanation. It looks like we dropped off two employees out of this, and then just help me understand why we broke up the 6010 and 6011, created two different units on there. I'm looking at page 116.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the reason for that, in past standard budgets, Unit 6011 was presented in the Unit 6010 budget as a separate line item for the source of funding. When we would actually operate the budget, we would establish it in Unit 6011. So this was really just to get our budget request in sync with how we're actually operating the budget. It's not a change in actual dollars or source of funding or anything like that. It's just having the budget document reflect truly what's happening in our accounting system when we expend the funds.
Okay. And then I guess the first part of my question was, has there been a reduction of two employees? And then when I look at the series, just 100, we've got an increase from the base budget to the standard budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there has been a reduction of the two employees. In this biennium that we're in right now, we did have two legislatively authorized pay increases. So I think that's probably part of what might be the reason for the increase, or actually it looks like it's more an insurance-related issue. So, again, it's probably the health insurance issue that we talked about earlier.
So we lose two employees, and it still goes up because of the health insurance.
Mr. Chairman, I know this is another unit that has had some transition. So, again, it could be the question of the level of coverage that the new hires selected versus where the previous employee was budgeted for health insurance.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
By the way, the characterization of A&I as being mean and cold-hearted did not come from the state library employees. It came from A&I employees. No, it didn't.
Protect your sources. Jeez. All right. Well, Mr. Chairman. That was important. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a number of training requests throughout your budget that are exception requests that appear to be standard training that would be ongoing. Why are they exception requests this year and they haven't been part of your standard budget?
We did not have a safety program in A&I before this, so the safety program for A&I and A&I employees is a new program within the last 2 years, so that's why it's an exception.
So it'll show up as part of your standard budget in the next biennium?
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Will it show up as part of your standard budget in the next biennium?
Yes, it will.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay, well, that'll conclude A&I 006. Look forward to your responses to some of the requests that we've asked for. Dean, now we're going to go into boards and commissions. Are you running that, or how are we doing this? We can probably do a break. I just want to get...
Mr. Chairman, we actually have two separate presentations. Michelle Lamore is the executive director of the supported boards, and she will be presenting those 17 boards to you.
Okay.
And that would be coming up next. And then we have the independent boards, which each agency has their own budget. So that's okay. What's on deck.
And I think you said that you have a handout. Did that go out yet?
No.
We're going to take about a five-minute break or something, and maybe that will speed up the supported agencies.